early in my ministry, I did a lot of youth ministry. And one of the scriptures that stuck with me that the youth painted on the wall when I was at First UMC in Grand Junction was the scripture. They interpreted it and they said, God must increase and I must decrease. And I think about the mathematic symbols for increase and decrease. I kind of like that image. God must increase and I must decrease. And I was just looking up the passage from John 3:30, where really John the Baptist is speaking about Jesus and saying he must increase and I must decrease.
Let me welcome you to Mindful Leader. This is episode number 9. My name is Dennis Shaw. I'm a retired elder in the Mountain Sky Conference of the United Methodist Church. And our guest today is Annie Arnoldy. Annie is the superintendent for Vitality and Connectional Ministry. And she is a graduate of Colorado State University, Iliff School of Theology. And she also has a master's certificate from the University of Denver in organizational leadership. She has been appointed to the local church a number of times. And she has been in this role as the director of Connectional Ministry since about 2019. Do I have that right? She's nodding her head at me. And so this is, she's starting her fifth year. Fifth year. So I've known Annie for a long time. I've known Annie before she even started at ILF when she was a member at Hope United Methodist. And we had some talks then when she helped us with youth related events. Welcome, Annie. Welcome. Thank you for having said yes.
Thanks, Dennis. I'm really excited to be here.
And I'm excited to talk to you a little bit. Annie and I have shared some notes back and forth, and we're going to talk a little bit about some leadership elements at the local church. And she wants to talk a little bit to us about moving from a performance narrative to a narrative about balance. And she talks about that holding the present moment was the way she phrased that to me. So, Annie, what does that mean to be holding the present moment?
Yes, let's jump right in. Actually, I want to mention that you said this is episode number 9. Number 9 is my favorite and lucky number. So I'm so happy to be number 9.
And we're going to broadcast this, let's see, yesterday. It'll be the first Monday in September was when I'll release it.
Wonderful. All right. Well, to dive in, this is something that's been cooking in me for quite a while. From all of the literature I've read, from what I've observed in thinking through, are people well? Do people have a sense of well-being? What is our narrative of performance? And how does social media feed into how we think we have to perform? So I'd love to share sort of across the board just a few thoughts, and that'll dig us in a little bit further. So one thought I came across in an article I read in the work of Jonathan Haidt. He's a social psychologist.
He's so good. Yeah.
He says it's the design of social media to make us think we're connecting more. And actually what's happening is we are performing less and feeling less connected, but we feel like we have to perform more to a greater extent to be connected. And it's just not satisfying that true sense of connection for us. So I've thought about that a lot in thinking of what we see when we're not meeting the present moment, when we're performing, sort of running on that hamster wheel and not truly connecting. And I think what we see is anxiety, burnout, poor boundaries. People start to isolate. They feel disconnected and they have a reactive mindset. And I feel like we see some of this. It happens for clergy, absolutely, because we are, no other. And maybe even more in a fishbowl. So when we aren't connected and when we are not in that true present moment, these are some of the things we start to see. And it makes me feel like as leaders of our conference, we need to start to think about things differently. And this led me to think of how do we think about performance?
Interesting. Episode 8 is with Sarah Calvert, who's the district superintendent of Northern Virginia. She took an element of this as part of her dialogue for that. So I would encourage people listening to this one to also go back after they listen to Annie, go back and listen to Sarah in episode 8, because it's the other side of this coin. If this is a similar kind of thing.
And I think probably for those of us who are having a long career in ministry, and maybe even for those who have switched careers and ministry as a second career, there are certain things I'm finding that have to be done in order to make this sustainable. And that's what I'm going to talk about.
Good. And so how do you make it sustainable?
Right. Well, there's a scripture that I came to, and actually you spoke of youth ministry. Youth ministry has long been a passion for me since I was 15, 16 years old. Finding that connection and then helping young people find that connection. So early in my ministry, I did a lot of youth ministry. And one of the scriptures that stuck with me that the youth painted on the wall when I was at First UMC in Grand Junction was the scripture. They interpreted it and they said, God must increase and I must decrease. And I think about the mathematic symbols for increase and decrease. I kind of like that image. God must increase and I must decrease. And I was just looking up the passage from John 3:30, where really John the Baptist is speaking about Jesus and saying he must increase and I must decrease. In trying to get people to understand, it's not about me as a human being, and it's not about me baptizing people, and it's not even about me being a celebrity or having the right answers. It is truly about the one who is the direct connection to God, and how do we find that direct connection in our lives? So I'd say that's where it starts for me, is this direct connection that actually Dr. Howard Thurman says must be done in secret. It's that mystic mindset, that it is this practice and habit that we have about connecting with God. And that's where we start.
I'm going to confess out loud that before I got to Hilltop in Sandy, Utah, I don't believe I had ever heard of Howard Thurman. And I, when I left there, I had heard of Howard Thurman a lot. Part of it was through the black clergy that were there in the Baptist side. They introduced me, plus my music director introduced me quite a bit. And I'm like you. I came away from that experience reading his material profoundly altered, profoundly changed.
Me too. And I continue to read his books because he has so many. And so I'm going through and going through, and he continues to inspire me in the way that he led ministry, but mostly in the way that he led his life.
Yes.
And that's where we're trying to get to.
Yeah. It's one thing to say it. It's another thing to actually do it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So I've thought about some antidotes. I thought I would share. These could be considered the new benchmarks of performance if we're really talking about how do we change our mindset so that these benchmarks, these antidotes are how we say we are high performing. So I have three of them. I have three to share. And those three are to connect, to simplify, and to dream. And I'll tell you more about a little bit about each one.
Please.
I'm sure we could dig and dig. So in the connecting aspect, connection to God, connection to self, connection to others. Mm-hmm. And the world we live in today does not invite us to take the time to do any of those very well.
No.
So I think we have to separate ourselves to really consider, what does it mean to take on the practices of Christ? So what are those things that I will choose above all else so that I keep my connection time with God, but taking on the practices of Christ? And truly, he was out in the community. He went away from the crowds regularly for prayer.
Right.
He brought people with him. He did not do this alone.
Right.
So that connection piece is just central in us thinking about how we perform. What does that mean? It doesn't mean we go at it by ourselves. It doesn't mean we work 12 hours a day. It doesn't mean, you know, we take zero time for ourselves. It really means holding boundaries and practicing as Christ practiced.
I'm you and I are on the same page with this. To me, I see this relationship issue as sort of a three-legged stool, like a milking stool, and all three legs need to be in balance. And those three legs are relationship with God, relationship with the community around me, to include others. And my third leg is actually because it's a relationship with myself. Mm-hmm. I have to make sure that I take time for myself. And whether that's alone time, journaling, to be determined. Because for me, journaling is extremely helpful.
Yes.
I write it down and somehow it's like a little message from God of things I need to work on and think about.
Actually, I've done the same practice for years and years. Very helpful. I'll share a little funny story about how my 12-year-old, I have 12-year-old twins, a girl and boy in seventh grade, and they are helping to teach me about connecting to myself in some new ways. And one of those ways is, you know, when everybody's tired after school and maybe it's before dinner or we're just trying to get through dinner, and then everybody seems to save up all of their emotional angst. And so it comes spilling out in lots of different ways. One example was from last night. So this week, my husband's out of town for work. So it's just me and the kids. I have three kids. And, you know, it's our last like 30 minutes before they need to get ready for bed. And so I went downstairs trying to help get some new sheets on a bed. The kids said they were packing lunches. Well, all of a sudden I heard like a crash, which is not uncommon. And then a scream, and I come up, and apparently I didn't really hear how this story really went down, but the kids, Noah and Mia, my 12-year-olds, jumped on the couch. It's a sectional and it's separated. And so one part of the couch hit a table that had a vase on it with a plant. Vase went crashing to the floor, broke, dirt, pot, you know, the whole thing.
Yeah. Been there.
Yes. My kids reacted very differently. Noah came to find me. Mom, something's wrong. Come help. Mia ran to her room crying because she was afraid she'd get in trouble. And so I came up just sort of like in the hecticness, like, what is going on? And I found connecting to myself, this is where I've needed to stop myself in the moment, in the same way I've asked my 12-year-olds when they get sort of knocked off kilter to pause and take a couple deep breaths and like, let's evaluate what's important right now. And so I did the same thing. And my son said, I know you're going to get so mad at us. And I was like, let me take a breath. Okay, let's figure out how to clean this up. Let's take one step at a time. I would like to know what happened. I am upset, but this is not the end of the world. Let's clean it up. And in those moments, really feeling like, yes, connecting to myself is taking those few moments, not to react, but to respond, you know. And then it was the whole other going upstairs to find my daughter to, you know, calm her, figure out what she was afraid of. Really, was it the crashing noise or was it, you know, now I think I'm in trouble. So sort of just that taking that space and time to say, life did need to stop in the moment and we sort of needed to reset. And that's how we stay connected to ourselves and others. But it's the pause to get to the present moment again. And it does take a minute. We're not perfect, but getting there and finding it, whether we're leading a church meeting, something goes wrong, whether we're at home, something goes wrong, but that's life. It's like more often than not, something goes wrong.
Yeah. Life does present those moments. There's no question. And part of the dialogue I had with Sarah Calvert on episode 8 was, particularly in a leadership position, people see you at those moments. And so do you preach and say one thing, and then when something else occurs, do you behave differently? Or do you behave the way you encourage other people to behave themselves? And it's important.
Yeah.
It's important to not only talk the talk, but walk the walk. And it can be a real challenge at times. And I think part of it, you have to be prepared to admit out loud, you know, I didn't handle that well.
Yep.
Or Just take a deep breath. Mm-hmm. And let's see if we can sort this out.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I absolutely, we have to practice it. The experience, there's nothing like the experiential. Yeah. And this is the same thing. I mean, I think it leads right into this simplicity or simplify, because when we decide to make our habits, and we probably can't handle more than two or three at a time, one should definitely be around our centering practices or our spiritual formation practices. And in the experiential, like right now, I've decided I'm going to read each of the four gospels again, just in my study Bible, just with the study notes and the words on the page, because I haven't done it for a while. And so in this practice, not only do I have to take the time to do it, but I'm again reminding myself of the tools of Christ. What actually happened? What did Jesus do? How did the people react? How did he react or respond? So I'm just thinking, in the simplicity of deciding to take on two or three habits, this is when we start to practice things that will make a difference in our real lives when we get into those hectic moments. These things do matter.
Yeah. Yeah. They do matter. I mean, there's no question that they do. And it sometimes putting on the mantle of Christ can be challenging. It's for me personally, having lived a life outside of the church for so long, and then feeling called into ministry, I personally experienced a feeling of unworthiness. Who am I? Who am I to be doing this? And I had to get past that. I had to get past that. And and part of what you were driving at there, the more I preached, the more I studied the gospel, the more I had to engage myself with serious theologians, the Howard Thurmans of this world, the easier it became. Easier, perhaps not the right term, but the more it became a fundamental part of my life.
Yes, exactly. I think going back to the world we live in today, social media and the way everything is at our fingertips has driven us away from the sitting with things, thinking deeper, contemplation. I mean, it is a react kind of world. And with our smartphones, it's immediately, I can Google that. I'm going to respond or react. I'm going to place a comment. I'm going to put this out there. And I will admit that so many times I'm tempted to buy into that. Even if, you know, let's say I'm dissatisfied with a product, put it right out there. You know, our culture now says, oh yeah, the way you get your voice heard or get back at that company or whatever is to put out that bad review. And I've really tried to be thoughtful about how and if I'm going to review anything to put out there in the world, partially because that shapes me. If I'm putting out negative, if I'm being tempted to react and I give into that, it's just like kind of putting this crust on myself that I don't want there. I don't want to have a hard shell. I want to be responsive and I want to be thoughtful. And I just think of those things, how the world is tempting us into this reactive space. And that truly, especially if we are clergy or Christians, we are called to this other space. And it's hard to do that in the world we live in today.
Yeah. Right. He's a theologian out of England. He's got a book out on the biography of Paul. And part of the original early Christian communities, which were descendants of the synagogue communities, they were centers of accountability. And they were prepared to be different than the world around them. They were prepared to see the world differently. And I think part of what you're talking about with this, the current world calls us to a borderline conformity. We're called into conformity with the world. And I think the invitation is for us to recognize that there's elements of that that are okay, but there's other elements of that that are less than okay. They're not good. And there are things for us to stop and say, is this really healthy?
Exactly. And I actually think our Christian faith is more valuable than ever for real world well-being. And I hope every church, all the lay people and the pastors can claim that our witness right now, I mean, it should be shouted from the rooftops that we have this way, the way of finding peace. We have a spiritual leader. We have these spiritual practices that are very popular in the world. Yoga is very popular. Mindfulness is very popular. These are the practices we have: centering prayer, meditation, movement of your physical body. These are all things that our faith says we should do as well. And I keep thinking of being in the world, but not of the world.
Right.
This is exactly what I'm trying to teach my 8-year-old and 2 12-year-olds. And it is a daily practice with them where they're watching what I'm doing and what I'm saying, and they're watching what their friends are doing and saying, and other parents. And it is a daily mindful practice to recognize when I pick up my phone, when I'm with them, what am I doing on it? How can I share what I'm doing? So they know when they pick up their phones, which have a lot of limitations on them, they're sort of trying to seek out, what is it we do with this device? What is it? How are we supposed to interact with the world? And so I just think for all of us as leaders, spiritual leaders, the ways we do these things really do matter throughout our daily lives, whether we're in our offices, whether we're in the church building, whether we're out in the community, that we get to shine this light of Christ that says, be joyful, that says, you know, offer the fruits of the Spirit. And are those being produced in our lives? And I really feel like these points of connection and simplifying what we do and what we prioritize are going to produce these fruits of the Spirit that are just irresistible to people in the world who are seeking that peace.
You wrote down on your note to me about Jesus and centering prayer, mm-hmm. and then using that to help personally stay in the present moment. Is that something you'd like to perhaps explore at this moment, or you would like maybe save that for another day?
Well, so maybe we'll get into it more on another day. And
okay.
I will fully admit I'm not perfect at the centering prayer, but what I do know is it wasn't a moment, but the stretch of time in my life when I took it seriously to find that way of centering. And for me, I took a couple of sessions or classes on transcendental meditation. And mm-hmm. then I had several books on centering prayer, because there is a method to doing it to just help calm your mind.
There's a type,
and yeah, have that practice of the word that brings you back. And I find now I can do it for 1 minute. If I only have 1 minute, I can take a 5-minute break. I do find it challenging to do 20 minutes at a time, but that's kind of the goal, that habit of 20 minutes at a time will truly change yourself, your being, and help you be more calm, more mindful, more purposeful, and truly more centered. But I think even finding it for those small periods of time, it has helped transform how I'm able to be present with people, with my work.
I don't mean to suggest that I drive every day doing centering prayer, mm-hmm. but there are times in my life where I feel like I need centering prayer. So I will sometimes use the traffic lights and the stop lights and the stop signs in order to, so if I take a 30-minute trip, every time I hit a red light, I use that for a brief centering prayer. And some of it is repetitious. It's,
yes.
I repeat the prayer 3 or 4 or 5 times. And I find that it's amazing how it changes me on the trip. I'll start the trip jangled, mm-hmm. and I'll get to where I'm going in a very different place.
Yeah, I agree with you, because I will say if I'm in my uncentered place, I will think a red light is for checking my texts or doing something like that, which is just more distracting and a terrible practice when you're driving. But if I use my drive time, I have a couple of sort of meditative podcasts I like to listen to. If I use my drive time with one of those, the trip becomes healing and centering, and I'm not bothered by red lights. You know, all of those kind of things that I think you're alluding to as well.
Yeah. Well, and it's just a technique that that might work for somebody that another person might find it doesn't work for them.
Yeah.
And I personally, my own observation has been, okay, if Annie's and my idea doesn't work for you, then try something different. But you need to find a way to sort of let the world create a barrier with you, between you and the world, for you to chance to stop and reflect and deal with yourself.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it's transformative. I wish this for everyone, that they can find this place of peace. And I think these are the ways that we do it. Small ways, everyday ways, things that we make habits, and keeping it simple.
Yeah. Simplicity is, Dr. Lovett Weems, in several of his books, talks, he has this quote, I think it's by Oliver Wendell Holmes Jr., but he talks about simplicity on the other side of complexity is a thing of beauty. Sometimes you have to go through the complexity to get to the simplicity, is the point of it. But I'm with you. The more complicated you make something, the harder it is to be able to actually ever end up doing it. Simplicity in its own way Holmes says it's a thing of beauty.
And it is a thing of beauty, and it's harder than you think, which is so funny.
Yeah, it is harder than you think. I can sit down and write myself out a schedule of what I want to do with journaling and scripture reading and devotional and centering prayer and that kind of thing, but then actually doing it every single day. And personally, for me, it's therapeutic. I discover that when I do it, I am better for the day when I do it. That doesn't mean go back to my theme. It doesn't necessarily mean it works for everybody. Just because it works for me doesn't mean it works for Joe Smith, but it might. but it might. Have you tried it?
Exactly. Yes, I think as Christians, we need to take those calls that Jesus called to people to do, those things, seriously. We need to practice visiting the sick. We need to practice calling the children to us. We need to practice going away for prayer time by ourselves. Yeah. These are the things that lead us to this life of presence and peace. And I think ultimately that leads to performance. I mean, truly, to come right back to where we were, when I've seen high-performing churches, high-performing people, high-performing laity groups, mission groups, people who are very engaged, very centered, joyous, they are doing these practices. There is a reason, a deep spiritual reason, why they're not getting burnt out at the end of the day. They have boundaries. They know when they're on and when they're off. They are able to say, here is our vision for this group. Here is the thing that we are called to do. And I want that for everyone. And it doesn't have to be forever. The things we pick up, we don't have to pick up forever. But what is it that you're called to right now in this season? And then how can you simplify enough to do it?
Yeah, I like the imagery. This is what you need to do now in this season. This season might last a while, mm-hmm. and there may come a time where you do something else or something different. But you need to establish for your season what's going on, right. and how it works for you.
Right.
I wonder if you and I talked before we began the podcast over the fact that we're going to have you come back and talk a couple of three times. I wonder if this is not a good potential stopping place for us, but it's also my pattern to sort of tease out one last thing. Is there something that before we close this particular one off today, is there something that you would like to amplify or discuss or put another topic on the table or something I forgot to ask that you would like? So
this is perfect because there's one last of my new benchmarks or antidotes. There's one last one I'd love, and it can be a teaser because we can get into it next time. And that's dreaming. So we talked a little bit about connecting. We talked about simplifying. Dreaming is my other one that I feel like in order to come alive in our vitality, we've got to bring back our ability to dream. And this includes celebrating, playing. And this has to do with how do we lead ourselves at home, at church, maybe in a work environment that's not the church, you know, for a lot of our laity, how is it that we capture this spirit that is playful, that is about envisioning what's possible and listening closely enough to God that we can start to hear some of those big callings that really come alive inside of each of us? So how can we open up that dream space more that really becomes fertile soil that really draws people in to allow them to dream as well?
I think that may be our teaser for the next time Annie's on, that we maybe focus a little bit about that. And dreaming includes an element of visioning.
Yes.
And so I think we'll when you come back on in 2 to 3 or 4 months,
sure.
We'll talk a little bit about dreaming and visioning and go from there.
That sounds great.
Annie, I want to say thank you very much for having said yes to this. And I look forward to another conversation on another day. So
yep,
thank you very much.
It's my pleasure. Thanks so much. I love this resource for everyone.
God bless you. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Dennis.
For those of you that are listening, I just encourage you to get into a mode where you can see this on your whatever software, whatever application you're using for your podcast listening. I personally do mine on Overcast, but you can find this on iTunes. You can find this on a number of resources that are out there. If you have any doubts as to how do you find it, send me a note at Dennis, D-E-N-N-I-S, at Mantuan, Mantuan.org. And I'll have that address in the show notes as well. So I want to close up here and thank you very much, Annie. And we look forward to talking to you some more another day.
You're welcome. Sounds good.